This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Happy Halloween, everybody. A new podcast this time from Rogers Arena. Jeff Patterson of TSN 1040 and, of course, Botch, the man behind the Provies. We are in the seats at Rogers Arena where last night the Canucks were game and a 2-1 loss to the Dallas Stars in overtime. Can't remember that much positivity after a loss. Like, this, things are changing here with the Vancouver Canucks. Podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of the BC Hockey League's Coquitlam Express, and they're your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or if you're starting your search for a vehicle, check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. Before we hear from Botch, just want to say thanks to everybody. I got a ton of response last week after last week's podcast from Minnesota. Just threw out a question on Twitter asking you what you were looking for in the podcast. We do this because we have fun with it. We think we're injecting something into the market that doesn't exist, but we do it for you. And so wanted to make sure that you're getting what you wanted from the podcast. And I got a ton of feedback. Most of it was just keep doing what you're doing. And I think that was my ultimate takeaway. There were a few suggestions, a few that I probably could have done without as well. But, you know, again, just we're trying to keep the, it's a podcast for the people. And so we appreciate the feedback. All I will say is, as we try to build this thing, you know, if you can help us sharing it on social media, harness the power of social media, give us a retweet, share it, tell your friends, tell your family members. We do this on a weekly basis throughout the hockey season. And Botch, did you feel the love the way I did last night when you left the building? And even this morning, they lost the hockey game. But I can't remember people being this positive about a Canucks loss in a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, most people, it's hard to believe in moral victories, but the sense, I was the same way. Like, I was even caught up in all of that, too. Like, Markstrom was incredible, and I was catching this euphoria that was happening because they did outplay the Stars, for one. But for two, the Stars are now 13-0-1 against the Canucks in their last 14 games. The Canucks haven't beat Dallas since, in even strength, since 2013. None of that changed last night. But I do have to, I just got to touch on what happened in Minnesota before we carry on, because, you know, we got to close chapters. And I was reminded last night, as I was early watching, you know, doing the Provies and stuff, I had one eye on the Senators and Carlson. Eric Carlson was on the ice for 5 goals against an even strength, 7 in all. And I was like, holy shit. Like, it's so great to see Eric Carlson be human. And it reminded me, I had the exact same reaction in Minnesota after, you know, a long road trip where you did superhero type things, and I was like super intimidated by the energy you brought on that trip. And then there we are at the end, and it's you and I interviewing Brock Besser, and you're in, it's one, like, you know, I love your questions. Like, I really like your questions, but this was the worst question you've ever come up with. And you're in mid ramble on this question. You weren't even sure where you're going. You stopped dead in your tracks. There was this moment of dead silence. Besser's looking at you. I'm looking at you. And you look at me and go, Botch, can you help me out? And my first thought was, fuck that. I am absolutely not helping you out at all. I am going to let you die right here on this stage. And Brock was like super nice about it. Like, you probably owe him one, because he threw out a life preserver and he said, you know what? I know what you're getting at. I know what you mean. And I try to say, no, you don't, Besser. You have no idea. I don't know what he means. He doesn't know what he means. You don't know what he means. He goes, no. Let me answer this. And he stepped in, and it was a real epiphany for me, a wonderful moment to see, you know, Patterson, like Carlson, is human on some nights.
I'm not even going to try to defend myself. I choked. I flat out choked in the locker room. And a week later, I still don't really know what I was trying to ask. It was something about, his debut and how he made it look so easy, given that he had just played and finished his college career and closed the chat. And I just choked. I think I turned to you and just said, just finish the question, please. And I had a funny feeling that if I didn't tell the story, you were going to call me out on that one. But while we're in Minnesota, there is some unfinished business there because, you know, we've sat through a bunch of games over the years and now 11 this season for the Canucks. That game in Minnesota was among the worst hockey games I have ever seen in person. And the Canucks won, and, you know, it was a good goal by Jake, and he was one of the stories on that trip. And so, yeah, there were smiles in the locker room afterwards, not as many smiles as Buffalo. I think that game's going to stick with us for all time. But it was just such a dreadful hockey game, and if ever one photo could sort of encapsulate everything that happened that night at the XL Energy Center, it was that picture of the Granlund parents.
Oh, my God, that was incredible. I can't remember who tweeted me that, but it was a screen cap from the game, and they were posted on the game. And his mom, Granlund's mom, like, I mean, it was just such a Granlund game. Like, they're not exciting, particularly the Granlund we got here in Vancouver. These are not exciting players, and they're good players. They do good things. They make smart plays, but they're just not exciting. And the look, that stoic look on their faces really told the entire story. But so did Russo there, who was like the main, you know, he's the mini beat guy, always covering the Wild. Like the Wild, traditionally, like there's not more team. I don't think there's another team that has a more boring history than the Minnesota Wild. Like collectively, they've played more horrible hockey than any team, I think, of all time. And Russo, in the middle of that game, was saying, like, this may be the worst game I've ever seen. And the Canucks went into that trying, like, that was their objective, trying to play that way. And, of course, the Wild are without, like, three of their top six guys right now. So they took the bait. They wanted to play that way. And that game plan, and knowing who they're playing, that, you know, that's why they started Nilsson in that one. And it all worked out for the Canucks. They end up winning and certainly seemed to carry the momentum into this homestand so far. And last night, that third period was was kind of the opposite. That was among the more exciting periods I think I've seen this season.
All right, we'll get to today's Canucks in a sec, but we got to stay in Minnesota because two other things jumped to mind for me. One was scoreless through 40 minutes, again, just an absolute dog of the game. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to in this job and traveling around, you've been there and done that. You give us the arena reviews and those types of things. But I am curious about game presentation because Rogers Arena gets crapped on all the time for, you know, its game presentation and its atmosphere and its environment. And, you know, this was a Tuesday early in the season in Minnesota, but the game was horrible. Then you get to the second intermission, and I don't know if you recall, and I got to tread lightly here because ultimately it was for charity, but up on the Jumbotron for, it had to have been 10 minutes of the intermission, it was just two people talking about some sort of fundraiser they were having in the great state of Minnesota, and it went on and on and on, and I turned to you and I said, like, can we just start this? Like, as bad as this game has been, please, can we just get back to hockey? Because this is so bad. But the highlight to me of Minnesota and maybe the road trip was game day. This is the day after I had choked on the Besser question. Right. This is the day after Besser had slept in his own bed, gone home to the homestead, mom and dad, the fam. And the Canucks bring Travis Green out on game day. And again, it's a tiny little traveling media, it's you and me and somebody from Canucks website. And sometimes out on the road, you'll get somebody from the other team, you know, usually their website, they're just looking for a quote that they can put on their website, right, for a game preview. They don't usually ask questions, and you're not sure who they are, and they get what they want, and they kind of duck out of the scrum. And so we're having game day chat with Travis, asking, you know, questions about that night. And, yeah, it was going on. And at some point in the middle of it, I just said, look, the last couple of games, Buffalo and Detroit, you know, you've outshot them badly. You've spent most of the night in their end. Like, what are you doing right? And he said, yeah, you know, I think we're doing a lot of good things. I like the way, you know, our defense are retrieving pucks and they're moving them up ice. And, you know, the forwards are doing a good job and they're not wasting possession and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he finishes his answer. Fine. Thought it was an okay answer. And then, like, out of nowhere, like, I didn't even see her in this scrum. And again, I don't know if she works for the Wild or was an intern. And Travis had mentioned the word transition. We transition the puck well. And she just comes like over the top of the rest of us. Transition. Tell me about your transition. Am I wrong? Like she?
No, no, you're incredibly right. And the thing was, it wasn't just, she wasn't just dunking on us about transition that one time. Like I, again, tried to steer the conversation to places I wanted to go. I think I was writing about the balance of the lines, and that's what I was trying to get into. I would get two questions into my thing, and it was like Bulis at the preseason presser. Like she would, three different times, in 9 minutes, she came up with, what about the transition game? Like the same, literally the same question three times. And when it was over, you said, you know what? I'm going to ask about transition after this game. And I said, you can't, man. You can't do it. And sure enough, after that game, it was a pretty short, it was one of the, it was a short press conference because it was one of those ones. Like I find that we're getting a lot of reviews now on our questions and people break down. Like, are you, you're being too negative. You're asking too much about Vertanen. Like there's a lot of critique out there. And that was one of the first times I've ever experienced where after a game, I was second guessing myself. I was like, okay, I want to ask about how bad, I think it was the power play or something. Oh no. And Besser's placement on it. Like there were kind of negative tones, I guess I would call them. Like I call like the super positive fans out there. I call them the anti-negs, like the anti-negatives. So the anti-negs had been all over me about different questions. And so I was second guessing myself. Can I ask, like, I need to know about Besser again on this power play, but can I ask it without the anti-negs freaking out on me again? So I actually just put up my hands and said, you know what? I'm just not going to go there. They won the game. I'll let them have their day. Let the anti-negs dance in the streets and great. But sure enough, there was three or four questions and one of them was you again asking about the transition game. And Travis honestly seemed pretty happy to answer. I think he'd rather answer transition questions every day than the Sedin time on ice questions, which he's asked about almost every day.
Right, and the game within the game. I asked the transition question just for you. I was trying to get a reaction on the other side, but you wouldn't bite. You played it straight, and so we got. And look, the goal was scored in transition. The Wild moving the puck to center. Like, I mean, it was there on a silver platter for me. And you know, Henrik made a play, and Jake turns the puck back the other way. They score. Speaking of Besser, this was one of the other untold stories from the road trip. Just as we sit here today, and he's injured, he didn't play last night, we'll get an update at practice, but how many goals does Brock Besser have on the season?
He's got two.
Right. Yeah. So as we worked our way from Ottawa to Boston to Buffalo into Detroit,
yeah,
and finished up in Minnesota, and there's an NHL.com writer in every city, right, and it was like they had colluded, they had conspired here to ask the same question of Travis Green everywhere we went. And the question was, how is Brock Besser scoring all his goals? And like they all said it that way, like they, this emphasis on all his goals. And the first couple of times, Travis just answered it kind of, you know, whatever. But about the third time, and it's, again, it's a 5-game trip, and I swear he got asked in every, how is Besser scoring all his goals? And finally, Travis kind of shut one of them down.
Well, yeah, he said, like, okay, he's only got two. All right, so maybe we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, and he was right. Like he definitely, I think, has done well weathering the consistent questions. That was one, and the Sedin's lack of playing time has been one, which Farhan went at him yesterday again, and I like winced when Farhan started out because I'm like, are we really going to like go down this road again? Because I think the time on ice story, like was a story like the first or second game, and it was post game. I think it may have been the first game of the season, and Ed went up to Henrik, and Henrik said, "Oh man, like he basically said, I know we're gonna get asked about this all the time, all season," and he was already fed up with that storyline. And it's been like here we are, almost a month into the season, and almost every game. I honestly think that on that entire road trip, and this homestand, the only questions the Sedins have answered have been about their lack of playing time.
I would
maybe
agree.
Maybe the power play.
Well, I had a good chat with Daniel on Friday where I got away from that and asked him a few other questions just because, again, I felt like you know, this is a guy that I've covered for 15-plus years in this league. It's like I don't know Daniel Sedin anymore because out on this road trip, like, you know, the storylines presented themselves. It was Besser, it was Jake, it was Dorsett, it was Nilsson. You know, they threw in a Thatcher Demko on top. Like, there were so many storylines. They go 4-1. I'm kind of with you. Like, there will be a time and a place this year to, you know, pick this team apart. But after a 4-1 road trip, it just kind of felt like you were, you know, doing it just for the sake of doing it. So I'm with you. After the game in Minnesota, it was short and sweet. I got my transition question in, and away we went. Hey, as we finished up in Minnesota and you and I flew home together, not seatmates, but on the same flight, and we met Earl.
Sir Earl.
Met Sir Earl in the airport in Minnie.
Yeah, and he had done like this great like scouting report. He was at the game at Minnesota. I think he was with a couple buddies, and they'd gone to a Vikings game, and then they went to the Canucks game, and they ended up with seats like directly behind the bench, which sucks, turns out, for viewing the game, but it's great for observing what's going on the bench. And one of his great observations was that Newell Brown is constantly writing on a notepad, which I found like super surprising because, you know, Newell Brown to me is like, okay, 1-3-1, drop pass, 1-3-1, drop pass, don't put Besser in a shooting area. Like that's the only, like that's been Newell Brown. His return to Vancouver has been basically summed up in that. So I hope that among all these etchings he's doing on a notepad, he's going to find a way to put Besser into this when he comes back into the same position we saw Seguin in last night when he scored a power play goal. Two things came to mind when I'm watching that. Why isn't anyone on this penalty kill covering Seguin? One, two, why the hell isn't Brock Besser in that exact same spot every single time he's on a power play? And I don't care what you say about this lineup and Berchi and Gagne, whoever you want to pick out who you think should be right shot, left side, left circle. But dude, did you see Seguin score that goal? Besser could do that all the time. Let him free him. You're right. He only has two goals. How many would he have? Maybe then you put him on that position on the power play. Then people can ask, I think, will be able to ask, how is Besser scoring all these goals? And the answer will be, well, they put him left circle, right shot on that power play. And guess what? He's open.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just racking my brain here. He scored a garbage time goal against Calgary. It was a nice goal, but I mean, in a meaningless third period at that point. And then, well, no, the Calgary goal, he stepped in, yeah. and the Ottawa goal was a rebound from the front of the net where they somehow seem to think that's the place for him. But no, look, Travis Green, one thing we've seen from him is, you know, at even strength, he's not afraid at all to tinker within a game, make some changes, and yet for whatever reason, up front. And I wonder, I mean, we're 11 games into this thing. I know they got a power play goal last night, so maybe now isn't the time to be questioning it, but, the previous game, all three of the power play goals were scored by Besser and Horvat and Berchi. I'm surprised, and I do wonder how long the coach can be patient with that other power play. And look, I've stopped calling them the top power play unit, and I think people, if you one takeaway from this podcast today, please refrain from putting the Sedins on the top line, the top unit. It's just not the way it is anymore. So we can call it the Sedins power play unit, but there's no way in hell I'm calling that the top power play unit anymore.
No, and I think that like it's complicated for the team, right? That they pay a lot of deference to the Sedins, so you'll see atypical things happen. Like often they'll take the lead rush before games. Often when the lines are tweeted out by the team, you'll see them as the number one line.
The infographic.
It's complicated for them because there's, you know, the Sedins have, they're indebted to the Twins. The Twins have made this organization a ton of money over the years. And any success that's happened over the past 10 years has been because of the Sedins. We, in turn, don't have to pay that debt. We can admit, look, it's not the Sedins' heyday anymore. They're 37 years old. It's not like it used to be. They're not the first line. It's one of the big dramatic changes that Travis Green was intent, obviously. I mean, it's clear to everyone that when he got the job, one of his first things that he decided was that the Sedins were going to be 12 to 15 minute guys. And that's how he's approached it. He wants his balanced lines. He can pitch it that way. That's fine. But I think he broke it down last year and said, these guys are playing too much. It's not helping anyone. And there's a sentiment now that, you know, that Horvat and Berchi and Besser when they were together, and Gagne, like, they were great. They were really good anyway last night. Like, Gagne had his best game as a Canuck playing with those guys. There's a sentiment now, oh, now Horvat and Berchi are ready to take the torch. Well, hold on. Horvat, they led the team in points last year. Like, Willie could have done this last year. And there's a lot of frustrations I have that build up. And Magna's one. When I think back at what happened last season, Markstrom's not playing another. But one of the underplayed ones was how in a second half that meant nothing, he still rolled the Sedins out there for 18 and a half, 19 minutes every game. It makes no sense looking back. And I think that Travis Green fixed that problem immediately, and it's working.
And it's also worth noting, and again, we're 11 games in, but we've heard this a few times, and Ken Hitchcock yesterday before the game and then after the game last, Ken Hitchcock called the Canucks the best complete team performance that he had seen so far this season. And yesterday in the hallway before the game, Hitch, like, you know, it doesn't take much to get Hitch going when he throw a question his way and he runs with it. And he had nothing. He just, this tongue bath of praise for Travis Green and Barry Trotz the other day with Washington. You know, he coached in Nashville all those years and saw the Canucks through their glory years. And yet, Trotz the other day, now that he's in Washington, doesn't see them as much, but still was remarking about how different they are. And, it's interesting. Like, you didn't hear those things the last 3 years from opposing coaches.
No, you sure as hell did not hear those things, and certainly did not hear them in that playoff series, from that playoff series and beyond. You never heard stuff like that. And it's not just coming from the opposing coaches. It's coming from the players, too. It's been a long stream of shade thrown at Willie. We heard some last night. Both you and I were in talking to Alex Biega, and he talked about the differences this year to last year. And he was ecstatic at how this team is playing. And he admitted, and he said, like, look, last year we were up a goal or two, and we would change the game. We would change the way we played. Okay. Like, that's a pretty significant indictment on that Willie regime, because what were they famous for? They were famous for blowing leads. They were famous for, you know, second period meltdowns after they got up a goal. They were famous for late game meltdowns. They were famous for meltdowns. Like, that was what that team was all about. And, you know, I think Biega underscored yet again the differences between last year and this year. And the bar was super low, obviously, in Vancouver. Willie was checked out. Like, he was just in, like, checkout mode. Like, I think that he admitted after the season he knew in, like, February he was getting gonged. So he gave up after that. You could tell in the post-game scrums. You could tell in the way that he was deploying his players. Like, he was not trying to get a team to be better next year. He wasn't looking at big pictures. He was just doing what he always, you know, role is for, lean heavily on the Sedins, do the things he always does. This year, there is a coach in town. There is a guy who thinks the game, strategizes the game, and it's closer. Like, I don't know if Green's an amazing coach, but he's a coach. And for a lot of the last 2 years specifically, there really wasn't one in Vancouver.
Right. And anybody that's listened to the podcast regularly, and we appreciate that. And if you're not a regular, shame on you. You should be. But I mean, one of the things, the constant theme, and we kind of had fun with it last year, but there was a lot of truth to it too, was, you know, the game plan on so many nights was protect the one goal deficit, right? Like, a right. game like last night, that's what made last night. And to come back to the initial thought here about the positivity around this group, like, that third period is what people want to see. They went into the third down a goal. They didn't play it safe. They were pressing. They were looking for the equalizer. And when they got the equalizer, they were looking to go ahead, and they were trading chances. And there was that one sequence with about 4 minutes to go where Gagne had a great chance in front set up by Berchi, and then at the other end, Markstrom was forced to make one of his best saves. But it was fun. Like, for a low score, there were so many low scoring games in here last year that weren't fun. Like, fun was the last word that you would use to describe the Vancouver Canucks for a period. And I think it comes back to giving people hope that, you know, there's going to be more of that as this season goes along. But that third period last night was enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. I mean, the Canucks got scoring chances, and I mean, they pinched their defensemen. They tried to create stuff on the rush. There were things that we just didn't see a lot last year. Like, I honestly can't remember. Like, the crowd was, you could feel, there was this energy. Like, it was a bit dire at the beginning of last night's game. Like, there wasn't a lot of people in the crowd. It looked like all the, there were jokes out there about, look at all the maroon. Everyone's dressed up as maroon seats for Halloween. But the crowd filled in a bit more. It was a late arriving crowd, but organically it built like the energy, you know, Markstrom's play and he's all limbs and legs and he's wild and all over the place. It's fun to watch. It's really fun. It's scary. If I was one of his teammates, I'd be like, holy shit, like, does this guy, like, know what he's doing here? Sometimes it looks like he does not, but he is fun as hell to watch. And so was the team as the game went on. The Canucks did get better as the game went on. You could see the crowd respond to it. All of a sudden, there was reactions to hits. There was reactions to, like, really nice passes and scoring chances, like stuff you almost never see in Vancouver. And then organically, in the third period, a Go Canucks Go chant started up. And I'm telling you, J-Pat, when I heard that, my immediate thought was, like, did I hear one organic Go Canucks Go chant all of last season? I don't think I did.
No,
because if I did, it was way early in the season.
Well, usually they're in response to, you know, the Oilers fans that are in the building that start right. one, or the Flames fans, or Habs, or Leafs, or whatever. Like, it's in response, it's reactionary. But you're right. Last night, people were into this thing, and again, like, people just want to be entertained. They want to see a team that tries. They want to see the young guys have success. And yeah, no, Brock Besser didn't play last night, and we don't know his status for tomorrow night's game. But it doesn't seem like it's a serious thing. We'll come back to the trickle down on the Besser injury in a sec, but I just want to pick up on two things from last night's game. You mentioned Markstrom, and he was. I mean, that third period, the play that he makes on Roussel on the shorthanded rush, apparently it wasn't a gamble. He told me that much when I asked him.
Was he joking when he, like, you asked him, you presented the question, then you asked him about the gamble that he took to get there, and he did lose the race to the puck. And he deadpanned, it wasn't a gamble. And then he had this big smile on his face and all the media broke up laughing. I wasn't sure whether it was a joke or whether he was dead serious or whether he was like trying to convince himself, I think was really the answer, that it wasn't a gamble. Cause it was.
Yeah, no doubt. And then the way he smashed into the boards when you talk about him being all arms and legs. But then I asked him about the overtime winner and we kind of got last year's Markstrom. He didn't want to answer that question too much.
No, you said, can you describe, I think it was something along the lines of, can you describe the winner? And he said, yeah. It was a 2-on-1. Basically, this is what he said. It was a 2-on-1. Guy shot. It went in. That was like, it was money. It was great. It was actually a good exchange. It was nice to see. It was like a little bit of the new Markstrom. And that cranky, jackass, kind of jackassery Markstrom is definitely still in there, which is fine. I mean, if he's mad about something, like he's obviously, you watch the way he plays. And you just take that. I call it that Markstrom play where he threw himself into the boards and Gagne ends up scoring. You just take that play in isolation and you like that. It describes everything you need to know about Markstrom. Like, he is an ultra competitive guy. Like, it is, there is a fire that burns in him. Like, he really wants to win and he really wants to do well and he doesn't like getting beat. And sometimes he wears that at points. And I think he wore that when trying to describe that goal that went in.
So there was that play. Then there was the penalty as well. Was it Radulov? I think that got around him on the, and he had kind of stuck out his leg. He was so far, it kind of lost the net there, but, whatever. I mean, he's a battler and, he didn't give up the soft one last night. And I think, you know, when the Canucks tied the game at 1, I thought that was a pivotal point. Obviously, they had done well to dig themselves. It was just a 1-goal deficit, but they were back on even terms. And at that point, you know, the pressure goes up on Markstrom. Nilsson, earlier in the week, in a scoreless tie deep into the third period, couldn't afford to blink, and Dubnyk ended up blinking first. Last night, you know, Markstrom held his own and was forced to make a couple of key saves down the stretch to get them at least a single point. And it's not an easy league when you're down going to the third period to get something out of a game. And so I think, again, there was a lot of takeaways last night, and another one was the Bulldog. The Bulldog was bulldogging. The coach admitted as much after the game. I think, in his words, Biega was going. He was going nonstop. Like, that guy was everywhere last night.
He was hard. It was one of those games. Like, he's hard to ignore on, like, pretty much any game. Because he's just all out effort all the time. Apparently, he, like, works out like he plays. Like he's has these like crazy workouts. Doesn't matter if it's an off day or a game day or whatever. Like he's going bananas in the gym, and he's got the Bulldogs got a little chip on his shoulder. And he told us last night, he said, like, look, I sat down with Green in the offseason and I told him, like, I want to be a top six defenseman. Green knows Biega like really well. They spent 2 full years together in Utica and parts of another year or two there as well. And that was among, like, talk about guys that got better as that game went on. Like, he had the big hit on Pitlick. He had a couple of great scoring chances in the second period. He like, Biega has played really, really well. And they, in fact, haven't missed Alex Edler. Like, they've been, you know, they're on a run of their best games that they've played in quite some time. Like, they're controlling possession. They're controlling the shot clock. And a big reason why is that third pairing. It's winning its matchup every single night. And part of it is Pouliot, and part of it is Biega. And I think Green, well, I asked him about that stuff about Biega wanting to prove he's a top six. He goes, yeah, right now he's playing like it. Like, he is a top six. And he is. He is right now playing like it. I don't know if it's going to last. But certainly I came into the season thinking, like, if Biega's on waivers, who cares? I'm not thinking that way currently.
No, I mean, I think you could make an argument. As a true depth defenseman, you would be hard-pressed to find a guy that embraces and plays that role better around the National Hockey League. And it's not easy to be a practice player. Like, this is a proud guy. He wants to be a player, as he told us there last night. But you know that. And, you know, his first game in Buffalo, he hadn't played all season. Gudbranson gets suspended. They plug him in. Didn't really miss a beat there. Then he has to sit for a couple of games. And then Stetcher gets hurt and right back in there, and he hasn't looked back. And I agree with you. Pouliot, too. You know, again, it's so early, but Andre Pedan wasn't going to play here. Just for there were reasons, but Pedan was not going to play for the Vancouver Canucks. And so if you can turn a guy, and I know they had to sweeten it with a fourth rounder, but if you can turn a guy that wasn't going to play for you into a player who will and is and has upside, then, you know, right now the early returns on that trade look pretty good for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people complained sticker shock over a fourth and Pedan, and I'm like, okay, come on. Like, it's a fourth and Pedan. Like, that's, you know, it's loose change. Like, okay, big deal. I understand that the Canucks have been wasteful with draft picks. It hasn't been a good look. They should have been in a position where they've been acquiring them. But honestly, of all things to get outraged about, Pedan in a fourth is not among them. And Pouliot has already, to me, merits the fourth round pick. Like, he's been good. There's it's been a good deal. He's not gonna carry a team to the playoffs. He's not gonna win a playoff series. He's not gonna, like, you know, accelerate the rebuild. But if you're looking for a defenseman who's like kind of outplayed, I think, expectations, you start there. I think Biega is one. Like, Biega looks like, we watched a lot of Biega last year. He is for sure better this year. And maybe it's Green, and he talked last night about how comfortable he is in Green's system, how he used to. He probably knows Green's system better than anyone, and it maybe suits his style more than Willie's, like, pause, think, don't give up chances against, you know, all that cautious play that Willie wanted. I think the Bulldog wants to bulldog, and so there he is out there. Like, I think Vertanen's a guy who I think that Green system has helped out a lot, and definitely Bieg is another one.
I think, too, when you get to depth defensemen, so often what holds a guy back into that position, too, is his skating, and especially in today's NHL where it's just getting faster by the season. The Bulldog can skate, and you saw that. Like, there were times last night it looked like video game stuff. Like, he was up ice, and then he's the first guy back in position. He's big check, the glass is rattling, he's this undersized guy. But no, I mean, he's impossible not to like, and he's a terrific guy off the ice as well. And we'll see where it goes from here. But both Edler and Stetcher out still for a while, so I don't see the Bulldog coming out of the lineup anytime soon.
He has the Bulldog. I mean, it was an electric game, and Hutton had, like, a great game. Like, he's really come into his own here playing with Tanev, and a big part of that is the sometimes it's just chemistry of playing with someone. But man, talk about it, like, and under the radar is this guy Eric Gudbranson, like, just quietly under the radar,
which is how he wants it,
seemingly going unnoticed. And I couldn't believe after the fight, the stuff with Wilson, you talked to Gudbranson. It was an interview that got, you know, I saw it all everywhere over social media. I think Branson's dad favored it, liked it. And I listened to it, And in it, Gudbranson says, you know what? Like, I want to be physical, but I want to go unnoticed. That's the type of game I want to play. And I couldn't believe he said that. I was pretty taken aback. I mean, Eric Gudbranson should have a big, loud game. Like, you should notice Eric Gudbranson. Like, he should be rattling boards and knocking over Pitlick and, you know, big third periods. Like, this is a guy who has been. And as far as I know, is still looking for a long-term deal, you know, $4.5 million, $5 million plus. Like, dude, you got to get, if you are really chasing a deal like that, you got to be noticed, man. You got to go out there and do stuff. And that's, I mean, Green always talks whenever he brings up Vertanen, he says, like, I tell Vertanen, you got to make something happen in a game. You got to make a difference. And if you're going to be Eric Gudbranson and you want to be a big dog and you want to be paid like a big dog, dude, you got to do something to make a difference. And I'm just not seeing it right now. I'd rather have Biega than some of these guys.
You're taking the bulldog over the big dog?
I think I am right now. Like, he's like, I heard it and I'm like, you know, is this, like, is his confidence shook? Was it the wrist injury? Has it been, you know, he gets over-examined by analytics sometimes, and some of it's fair and some of it's not. Is that getting to him? Like, why would Eric Gudbranson, this big, bold, super handsome, powerful guy, like, why would he want to go unnoticed? That just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I hear you. I mean, he's the kind of guy, like, people in this town should be wanting to dress up as Eric Gudbranson on Halloween. Like, that should be the costume. You want to be Eric Gudbranson. No, it was a strange comment, and we'll see where it goes from here. But you're right. Like, last night, Bulldog outplayed the big dog. I don't think there's much doubt about that. PatCast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. This month, get a cash credit of up to 20% off the MSRP on most vehicles, including the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Check them out online, eagleridgegm.com, for full details. It's not a big issue because they're winning, or at least picking up points as they go here, 5-1-1 now in their last seven. But it is funny to me. And I get Edler and Stetcher are out of the lineup right now, but every year, usually it's Tanev and we kind of joke about Tanev, but every year it's the same thing, that this is the year this wave of offense is going to come from the back end on the Vancouver Canucks. It's just going to wash over this team and they're going to look so transformationally different, just the way they play the game. And here we sit 11 games in and the 10 man, the only defenseman with a goal, he's got two of them. They haven't got a goal from a defenseman in the last 8 games. And, you know, again, they're getting points, so it's not that big a deal, but there are nights like last night or the game in Minnesota where the offense isn't flowing, where you would so gladly take a contribution from anybody on the back end.
This is like one of your hobby horses, and I'm so like happy it is. Like it's you know, you come back to this theme, and I could feel it coming as this season was going on. Like, when is Patterson going to start asking questions about this defense and why isn't scoring? Because you're right, we were billed and sold that this was going to be the active defense, that this was going to be the one that pinched, that this was going to be the one that didn't score only 22 goals collectively over the course of the season, because it's been really sad. And you can't win long-term in the NHL if you're not getting offensive push from the defense. And right now, that the only, I mean, it's come from the most flukiest place, Tanev with the two goals. Other than that, it's been zero. So they're on this great run. They were going for their fifth in a row last night. And then before the game, you muster up some questions about this defense not scoring. And of course, Travis says he loves, like, what's he going to say? Because they have been dominating possession. They have been winning the shot attempt battle. They've been controlling their oppositions lately in a way that we haven't seen in a while. So, I mean, he's got a point. Like, the defense is playing better, I would say. I think that, but it's not one. It's definitely not like I can pour all kinds of praise on Biega. He's not going to score 12 goals in a season. Pouliot is not going to score 10 goals in a season or anything like that. I mean, it's just not an offense. It's not a defense that's constructed to produce a lot of offense. You'd expect it from Delzato. I think that's one of the guys, they got him. But I've made this point before. Like, they went out and traded for Pouliot. They brought in Delzato. They got Troy Stetcher. They've kind of worked Ben Hutton into this top four role. All these guys are they still need probably arguably more than anything, a puck moving power play defenseman. None of those guys have fixed the problem. It's sitting right there. It's one of the big holes in the kind of Jim Benning regime. If he's trying to build a competitive team, there's a massive hole sitting there, and they don't really have one on the come. Like Olli Juolevi, I mean, he may still, like, it's super early in his development, and I agree, it doesn't look great that there's other defensemen out there that are blowing up the NHL so far this season. There could be potential defensemen taken after him who are finalists this year in the Calder race. It doesn't look great that, you know, of the top 10 in the Juolevi year, 9 of them have played NHL games. The only one who hasn't is Juolevi, but he's still got time. He's still got time to figure things out. He's been playing well in Finland. All of that's encouraging. What Juolevi is not going to be is a number one defenseman who can work the power play, who can get you a ton of goals. And it's been a real, I don't know if you call it blind spot, but like they've really, those guys aren't easy to find, but the Canucks have really flailed in trying to find them.
Right. And there's sort of been that long lineage. And, you know, it just so happens that Dan Hamhuis was here last night, and Hamhuis is, in his prime, he was a very good player for the Vancouver Canucks, but again, a very quiet offensive player. And I think there's some similarities, between Juolevi's game and a guy like Dan Hamhuis. And, Hutton, I do think, has paired so well with Tanev. Who we found out on Friday. I was busy on Friday. Talked to Goodbranson. I talked to Daniel, but I talked to Hutton too. And I had to stop him mid conversation because I was talking about the opportunity to play with Tanev. And he said, "Oh, it's easy to play with Tanev because he's so talkative out on the ice." Now, Chris Tanev's been here, 8 years now, or parts of 8 years, it seems. Yeah. Like he's been around. Like we've got to know Chris Tanev. He's lots of things. Talkative. From a media standpoint, whether it's on the record, off the record, like with a microphone in his face or not, you know, pretty low-key, easygoing, laid-back guy, talkative is not a word I would use to describe him. So when Ben Hutton says it's easy to play with him because he's so talkative on the ice, I had to stop him and say, repeat that, please, because I'm just not buying it.
Yeah, and I did hear this interview, and you did stop him cold in the middle of the interview to ask him to explain how the hell is Chris Tanev talkative? Because, I mean, it's not just the media. I mean, Tanev is renowned around that locker room for a guy who uses very few words. And the words he does use are with very soft tones. Like, I'm not even sure if Tanev was talking, you'd be able to hear him on the ice. So I don't know what those two have going. Like maybe he's worked out like some hand signals, some face signals that he gives Hutton, tells him where to go. But yeah, I mean, anyone watches the games knows that Tanev's not out there screaming at Ben Hutton and pointing out like, get here, get over there. Like you just don't hear him. You don't hear him during games. You don't hear him after games. And I'd bet in the summertime when he's at Blue Jay games, you don't hear him there either.
It's all in the hair flip. Hair flip to the left means one thing. Hair flip to the right, it signals. I think they've got it down. They're in such lockstep. But they are playing well, and Hutton's responded to the increased ice time. And, again, we'll see what happens when Edler and Stetcher get back here. But, this is all about internal competition from the goaltender on out, and it seems to be producing the best right now in a lot of the players on this hockey team. But they had to get by last night without their leading scorer, Brock Besser, and again, we don't know his status. Maybe we'll find out more after practice here. Should be back by the weekend at the very least. But there were some eyebrows raised on Sunday morning when the news came out that Besser's out of the lineup, and the return. It was the return of Jason Megna, followed shortly there by the recall of Anton Rodin. Megna played last night. Rodin did not, and we'll see if there's a chance that those two are flipped for Wednesday's game against New Jersey. But how surprised? Well, for me, I have to say, given what the organization had done in the offseason, addressed this idea of depth here, but depth on the farm as well, real players down in Utica, and the first two forwards recalled this year, Michael Chaput and Jason Megna.
Yeah, and here we are in basically the same situation as we were last season with Chaput and Megna getting the chances, and like Megna was not good in Utica. Like he played 4 games in Utica, and he was not good. I think Travis reasoned that he was good in some preseason game against the Flames. Like, I mean, it was some pretty wonky logic that they used to recall Megna. And I'm pretty disappointed to see it. But there's a lot of reasons. Like, Magna's tied in to some of the worst moments that we all of us, the fans, the media, all of us who watched and suffered through it, and it was a lot of suffering that we went through enduring last year's season, tied like a bow, like tightly around that year and tightly around Willie. You think Willie, you think Megna. You think Willie, you think Megna on the power play. You think Megna with the Sedins. You think Megna on the ice late in the game, down a goal. What the fuck is Megna doing there? Why is he there, Willie? It didn't make any sense. Like, it was maddening. All of that, when I see Megna called up on that Sunday, all of it is rushing through my head. I was so, like, I wanted to stay off Twitter. I just didn't want, like, I didn't want to engage. I didn't want to fire up the anti-negs. I just wanted to, like, but then I saw Sat, like, tweeting about what a great move it was, bringing Megna up, because if Goldie's going to come up, he's got to play in the top nine. And I'm like, okay, really? Like, we're really defending a Megna call-up here because Goldie can, like, what line can he play on? That any of those offensive guys could play on any of these lines. Like, you saw it last night. Like, Gagne played with Burmistrov and Vanek. He was playing really well. So what did Travis do? He started double shifting him in the third period. He played like 8 minutes, 7:48 in the third period. Like, it was crazy. Travis can find ways to get his offensive guys ice time. And I don't think that there's not a line that a guy like Goldie or a guy like Boucher or a guy like Rodin can't play on in this group. I think that it's fine. You lost your leading points getter. You lost a guy who's been driving play. You lost a guy who's got a ton of shot attempts, top 10 in the NHL in shot attempts per 60 minutes played at evens. Like, he's been really productive. He's driven play, like, all in Brock Besser. If he's out of the lineup, you need an offensive guy. What did they lack last night? They lacked finish. They lacked an offensive guy. They lacked a Goldobin, a Boucher, a Rodin, someone like that who could make a difference. I'm sorry, but Megna is not going to make a difference. And I'm going to be harder on Megna because I've got a lot of bad feelings about what Willie put me through and put all of us through last year. So it's too soon. I almost wish that he had moved on to another organization, like him and Chaput, move on. Like, let's get to the so-called real players. Let's, when opportunity presents itself for games, let's see Rodin. Let's see Goldobin. Let's work him. This is not some great power play. Why can't Goldobin step in and perform on this power play? I'm sure Newell Brown on that notepad can find a little spot for Goldobin to play. Like, they've done it before when Virtanen played well. What did Green do? He mixed up his power play. He found a spot for Virtanen. So if Goldobin is the call-up, 10 points in 7 games, should have been him. There's no way you can seriously argue that it should. There's just no way that anyone out there can. Like, I couldn't believe Sat would argue that. Like, it just makes no sense to me that you can argue Megna should be the guy. And he later, like, I even texted him. I'm like, well, are you okay? Like, what's wrong with you? And he texted me back. He was like, look, I didn't think Besser, I thought he was going to play. So I thought Megna made sense as the extra forward. And that, I can concede, makes some sense. But man, if you need a guy to be in the lineup, Megna played 4 minutes, didn't play like the second half of the second period or any of the third. They could have had a guy in the lineup that could have helped in that third period, which was a lot of fun. How great would it have been to see Goldie rushing up and down the ice in that third period?
Sure, but Goldie's in Utica. Rodin is here. Like, it was possible that Rodin could have played last night, although he played Sunday and traveled. That's a lot, but, I mean, I'm sure the guy would have jumped through a bunch of hoops to get back into the NHL and play. I didn't realize that you were suffering from PWSD, post-Willie stress disorder, but it's pretty apparent. We may have to get you some help here.
Are you fully recovered?
I thought I had just bleached last year from my memory bank, but I do find myself most nights now comparing things, like, you know, going back and looking at the third period last night and saying, like, you know, that just wouldn't have happened last year. And I think 8 games into the season, I was already comparing, like, the goals that the Canucks had scored this year in 8 games compared to the, you know, the final 8 last year or the first 8 last year. So I thought I was over last year, but apparently I'm not either. It's still there. It lingers over us. So we can't hide from it entirely. Now, we should let the people in here on a little game that you and I play every night. And started on the road trip in the warm-up. We have to create our, again, warm-up means absolutely nothing. I get that. But, you know, you got to create your entertainment where you can. And so we get to the rink early. We've had our pregame dinner. We're doing a little bit of work, whatever. You know, you're looking for something. Warm-up now has become Thomas Vanek watch, and like it is must see. You can't avert your eyes from Thomas Vanek in the warm-up. So if you're coming to a game here,
come early.
Make sure you watch the warm-up. A guy that's been in this league a while, been there and done that. We established in the preseason there aren't a lot of Fs to be given with Thomas Vanek, and we've seen that in his play, but it's next level stuff when it gets to the warm-up.
The warm-up like encapsulates everything that there is about like Tommy Gunn, Thomas Vanek, Master of Meh, the guy who, you're right, gives no fucks about anything. He has the most lackadaisical warm-up I've ever seen in all. There's no stretching. There is hardly any. There's no pace. It's almost relaxing. It's almost like it's almost an experience where you're just your whole body just relaxes when you watch him take these warm-ups, and all you, invariably with 4 or sometimes 5 minutes to go in the warm-up, still with everyone still on the ice and going crazy and taking shots, maybe about the 7 minute mark. He drifts over toward the bench. He does almost looks like he's meditating. He does nothing. He's just standing there, and it seems like he's watching the clock. And sure enough, around 4 or 5 minutes, he exits the ice. He's the first one off every time. He leaves. I have no idea where he's going or what he's going to do by himself, but he leaves to go do something. I'm not sure what it is, but the Vanek clock is amazing. I think last night was the record. You clocked him in at leaving the ice at 4:52. Is that right?
Yeah. So just a shade under 5 minutes left, and it is glorious. Like, it really is. So now, if you're coming to a game, you got to make sure that you're keeping an eye on Thomas Vanek in the warm up. All right, we're coming to the end of the podcast here, but need an update from you on. Remember the Twitter poll that I did on the eve of the season, where I set the line at 98.5 points for the Sedins, and it was like 2,500 votes split right down the middle. And I had projected that the combined point total for Daniel and Henrik this year would be a shade under 100 points. We're 11 games in. Henrik has 3 points.
Look, like, they're going to be asked about this a lot. And I made the point that on that 5-1 run that they went on, they scored 21 goals. Only 2 of them were produced by the Sedins. And it's actually great when they're winning games, because finally it's like, okay, the team can score goals and win games and they don't need the Sedins. They are going to lose games. And when they start losing games and the Sedins aren't producing and there's no offense there, it's going to flip the narrative right back on them, because they are, at the end of the day, they are $14 million guys. They are proud guys. They spend all summer just with this chip on the shoulder. They're going to come back. They're going to bounce back. They're not really being given the opportunity to bounce back. Now, they could be way better on the power play. They should be way more productive on the power play. And the Canucks have to look at how they can. They can't just sit and let this rot. Can't let them rot on the power play. But, yeah, it is a little alarming to see that it's still early. Normally, they do get off to really hot starts, though, and they fade in the second half. Maybe this year with the reduced playing time, it'll work the opposite, because they have been controlling the puck. They've been winning their matchup more often than any other line on the ice. They've been controlling shot attempts and possession and all of those things. Like, there's a lot to indicate that the points are going to come. But if they don't and the team loses 2 or 3 in a row, there will be issues.
All right. Last 2 points. One is I always learn from the provies. So, again, last night, Tron Army in all its glory, the Halloween theme. I was pissing myself. Like, I went home. The beauty of the Photoshop is when you look at something for a second or a third time and you pick up the subtleties and the nuances, and there were so many good, like, Halloween lends itself to that kind of stuff. But my hat off to everybody that took part in that thing, because there were so many good ones. And if you haven't seen it yet, check it out on the province website, or follow the link on Tron Army on Twitter. It's worth your time. There was so much good and deep material there last night.
The Photoshops have been like so strong this year. And they're like, the one that just sticks with me is, it was a picture you took of Stetcher collapsed in Detroit as he's trying to get off the ice. He's crawling off the ice, and you took a shot and included a bunch of the crowd, and right in the middle of it was Stetcher. And Steve, I think it was Steve, took that photo, and he, in the empty seats, he put all these characters, like the Leafs dark guy, the rude Canucks fans who had their fingers in the air, Cheech eating a hot dog.
Excited Benning.
Freaked out Benning. Lots of flat J-pats in the crowd. Like, it was like, I looked at that for like half an hour. Like, I could, like, I wanted it. I kept saying, I want this hanging in my basement. Like, this is a work of freaking art. And again, last night there was lots of strong stuff. There was this fucking amazing flat J-Pat Pennywise from the movie It. There was the Hellraiser, and it's all the subtleties that they have in these photos, like that one with the crowd that you can look at for a while. And one of the best was that pumpkin carving that Tanev was doing. And Tanev, they changed it. So Tanev was carving a picture of you and Erickson. And right by his side, which I think you missed at the beginning, was like 8-year-old Ben Hutton with his head right on Tanev's shoulder. It was incredible.
Right, because Wyatt did the screen cap of Hutton in the intermission the other day with the goofy grin that he always has, but the hair was going, and then, you know, that's taken on a life of its own as well. And the other thing I learned from the Provies, and I think we'll just leave it at this, is who knew that the Provies were a family affair, Botch?
Well, I can't really, like... You know, there was lots of stuff on Flat J-Pat last night. Flat J-Pats were everywhere. There's a new thing where there's laminated Flat J-Pats. I will say, like, I asked my 2-year-old, like, or 1.5, like, what do you want to be for Halloween? And he did say Flat J-Pat. So there is a picture of my son Hudson being Flat J-Pat for Halloween. But I, you know, the rest, I don't know where they came from. I think a lot of families around the city are getting in on it, and it's great to see. And you can see it all, of course, in the Provies, but it's great to see what a rage Flat J-Pat is now around the Lower Mainland.
You ready for a big night of trick-or-treating? You catch a huge break weather-wise. That's always way more than half the battle. But you got the three little ones that you'll be escorting out, will you? Or are you on candy duty at the front door?
I'm giving my wife the choice. So I told her, like, ruminate on this during the day. If you want to go out and do it, go ahead. If not, let me take it. I'd almost rather, I think I should have let her have the nice weather. Because when I see nice weather on Halloween, all I think is, like, holy shit, it's going to be raining sideways. We are going to pay for this next year, because it's always right around Halloween where the weather turns. October's great. September's great. September's probably the most underrated month there is in Vancouver. But right around that Halloween, November 1st every year, we usually get hit by a brutal rainstorm. And Halloween, that actual night's about 50-50. Do you get a brutal rainstorm or do you get clear weather? So maybe I should step up and say, you know what? Nice weather. You take tonight. I'll get next year.
As parents, when you get good weather on Halloween, that's one of the great bounces of all time. So she probably does deserve that. This won't be breaking news by the time people listen to the podcast, but Brock Besser in front of us at practice, which means I'm starting to shudder a little bit because I'm going to have to talk to him after practice, and I'm going to go work on my questions now. I may write them down today. I hear the notepad is the way to go with the questions, so I may do that with Brock Besser. But for Botch, this is Jeff Patterson. Thanks so much for listening again. If you can share this on your social media channels, certainly would appreciate it and help us build this into something bigger than it already is. And we also want to thank Eagle Ridge GM, great partners in the podcast as well. Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, they're proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center, where everyone is a part of their hockey family. Canucks and the Devils, the return of Corey Schneider, Sidney Crosby in on Saturday, then out on the road for a bunch of November, so we're going to have to figure out the logistics of getting the podcast done. When I'm out on the road, Botch is staying behind for the November road trips, but we'll get it all sorted out and keep bringing you the podcast here on Province Radio.